We have
this good tradition of starting almost in time. And this is a discussion, okay?
It's a discussion.
Which means that you can continue talking because this is a part of discussion.
But in a very, very low voice.
So basically, the idea was more or less motivated by Paolo to try to initiate something on Burger. So we talked about it when we met for 3 weeks ago.
Yep.
And so then I thought it could be a good idea, so, but then you have to agree. And then I tried to present a bit the things which were done on related to Burger's turbulence. So what do I mean by Burger's turbulence? I mean to stochastic solution of Burger's equation, and which were basically developed in the course of the 90s, and beginning of the years 20.
Last century.
So what
is that? Being 90s, since 90s.
So what is the most important point from a stochastic PDE point of view concerning Burgers is that one is able to construct exactly the stationary distribution for Burgers, the stationary measure, and to derive it in the limit of vanishing viscosity, so what is important for turbulence in general, and in particular to the thing, of course, as you know, so Burgers, and maybe I will write the equation. So Burgers is like energy stokes without pressure.
You will be always working with multidimensional but potential case or multidimensional arbitrary case?
Multidimensional
potential, always happy.
When things are not known for something it was brain impossible. Okay? And basically the idea is to try to understand the behavior of such statistical behavior of the solution to this equation when f is a stochastic noise, smooth in space usually, and in the limit when the viscosity is going to zero. So basically the thing is that of course even if there is the same kind of nonlinearity as you can observe, quadratic nonlinearity as you can observe in Navier-Stokes, there is no pressure effect, so everything is local, everything is going smoothly. So why writing it? So of course one has to put also a potential initial condition. Okay. So that's basically the potentiality of the velocity field is the non-solenoidal. It's preserved by the dynamics in the case of Burgers. And the potential, so at any later time, the velocity will be the potential of the gradient of the given potential. And this potential is a solution of a Hamilton Jacobi equation, which is in this way. Okay? And the thing which is somehow magic with Burgers is the fact that one can use what is called the Hopf-Cole transformation. Which is basically consists in introducing a new potential, which is nothing but the exponential of psi divided by 2 nu. Okay, and this new potential z is, so basically it will cancel, this kind of nonlinear transformation will cancel the nonlinear term appearing in the Hamilton-Jacobi equation here, and it will be a solution of somehow the heat equation, together with the forcing term, which is a multiplicative force. So that's the basic steps of trying to solve Burgers equation, and that's why Burgers equation is integrable. So the thing is that now, in order to to understand what will be the limit of vanishing viscosity. So as you see, you have viscosity appearing here, viscosity appearing here, and viscosity appearing here. And so the idea is to try to construct implicitly the solution to Gauss equation, and then to take the limit of vanishing viscosity afterwards.
I want to make sure that you say integrable. In the absence of f, is integrable.
It's linearizable.
So with f, is still integrable?
Yes, sure.
It is? It's a multiplicative force.
It's very...
Well, statistically, it's of course non-linear if you want to get moments. But
this is a problem equivalent to the Schrodinger equation in the random potential.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
It's an outstanding problem. It's not solved.
Well, yes and no. We know a lot about Schrodinger equation with random potential.
Yeah, but it's a lot. It's very open. Very open. But say integrable is a little misleading.
Okay, so let's say that for sure, when f is zero,
you can find any moments. But to reconstruct from such moments, this is problem.
Not in the presence of generalized f. No, I don't believe that.
No,
for generalized f, that's the problem.
For general law, but if f is
not a heat equation, don't confuse that. Just to say, this is a linear equation. It's a heat equation. No, the simplicity is not here. Sorry.
Okay. No, you're right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let me go on.
Uh-huh.
So now the idea is to use a path integral representation of this solution.
Yeah.
Okay. And so somehow to average over a stochastic path, which are such that this thing is conserved along the path, and one gets a very nice representation of it, which is this z computed at x. Is nothing but an average over this path, okay, of exponential of what? So first of all, there is the initial potential which is transport, so it's giving 1 over 2 nu psi 0, and this computed, so I will introduce afterwards what is psi 0 is the initial potential. And now there is the integral over here. Integral of what? So from t0 to t of the forcing. And in the case where f is a white noise, for instance, in time, this will be a stochastic integral.
Z on the left hand side and Z on the right hand side are the same.
I'm sorry, yes.
Yes. Okay.
Let me define the path Z. So the path Z is trivial. It's something like dz of S, okay, is square root of 2 nu dw. So basically, it's a Brownian motion, Z, with a variance 2 nu. It's fine. And now the idea is, and here, I mean, it's average over. So here you have some stochastic. So now the idea is to take the limit of vanishing viscosity, and as you can see, now the viscosity is appearing as 1 over the viscosity here. So basically, there will be a saddle point appearing in the limit, which will tell you at the end that the potential itself, so potential, I have to take the log of this guy. The 2 nu will cancel the 2 nu coming from the expansion. And what you will get is that in the limit of vanishing viscosity, psi, yes, here I forgot to say that all the paths z are such that z at time t is equal to x. Okay, so I look at all paths arriving to the final position where I want to compute the function z. And now what I get is something where I have a variational principle, where I have to take among all these paths the one which will minimize the argument of the exponential.
So of course, because of the average, I will have an extra exponential term coming from the Gaussian distribution of Z. And what one gets is, so it's an inf over all paths, such that these paths are arriving at x at nt. So that's true in any dimension, no? Of a given action. And this action is defined as the integral from initial time to final time of, so basically there is kinetic energy part. So it's a modulus. And the potential. Plus the initial condition. Okay. So basically, once you know the forcing, you get directly the solution explicitly. As more or less explicitly. I mean, it's but the thing is that It's somehow, I mean, there is a, I mean, you can get very easily the trajectories, the minimizing trajectories by applying, by writing the Euler-Lagrange equation for this thing. And so now you get a lot of information.
But this is like a WKB theory.
Somehow, yes.
But the point is that your F is random, you want to do, and in principle, you're interested in, you will need to do averaging over it. Let's say it's Gaussian, but long derivative. So you need to do this and then do your saddle point approximation.
Sorry. This is just the expression of this, and the original equation is the equivalent expression.
No, it's
you go back to this.
Except that here, back to this, here you have taken the limit. Here you have taken the limit of vanishing viscosity.
If your algebra is right, it's just the, on the right and on the left, these two things are equivalent.
It's a very non-trivial limit taken, and this limit, when you take it, there are many different variables in which you can take the limit, and you have very different problems in different variables.
So this is basically
this is a very appropriate variables to take this limit where it's just a saddle point in a well-defined integral.
Let me first write the equations for the so the Euler-Lagrange equations.
Let's write it some tone and see what it
looks like. So Euler-Lagrange basically means that the derivative of this guy has to be zero, okay? And it means somehow that gamma dot is nothing but plus gradient of f along gamma. So it's d gamma ds. Okay? Which in the case of zero forcing is exactly, I mean, the fact that velocity is conserved along characteristics, okay?
Yeah,
which is nothing but saying that you put this to zero and this to zero. Okay? So that velocity is conserved along paths which are moving with this very same velocity.
Okay.
But now, the thing is that, of course, these equations are true only if gamma is indeed a minimizer. And basically, you might have...
Just do it.
What? I'm sorry?
Sorry, you have to do it. Gamma, what's gamma? How do you find the gamma?
Jeremy, sorry.
I am sorry. Of course.
Yeah. Yes. How proceed?
Thank you.
It's an acceleration. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Acceleration. So how do I define gamma?
Yeah. How do you do it? Continue with that. Just not. Because...
So if you want, I can draw a kind of picture.
No. I mean, you're just
thing.
What? No reason to interrupt you on this.
So basically, you are taking, so let me put time here, time t is here, initial time is there, position, and so to know the value of the potential at this time and this position x, what you need is to look at all paths. So I mean, depending on the so if this forcing potential is sufficiently smooth, let's say that it's differentiable. No, it has to be differentiable, that it's twice differentiable. Basically, these gammas have to be Lipschitz, so they have to they cannot have jump. And basically, what you have is that you have to look at all these paths, which are arriving at x at time t, and among all these paths, you measure this action, and look at where the action is minimal. I mean, for which path the action is minimal.
Yes.
And if the action is minimal for a given path, then this path will obey the Euler-Lagrange equation. Okay, that's fine.
Understood. This is very tricky. Elementary thing, okay?
Yeah, it's elementary. Yeah, I'm going on.
So let's not interrupt him. Then we don't get to something non-elementary.
So, okay, so now what is the so now let's do again elementary physics, okay? And look at what might happen concerning this minimum. So typically, for almost all positions, okay, if f is smooth in space, I have that the minimum is attained for only one trajectory, one minimizer. So if there is such a unique minimizer, then it means that the minimizer has obeyed this and that I have a smooth point of the solution. Then, for a set of codimension 1, okay, I might have two minimizers there. And if I have two minimizers, okay, so which will correspond to this functional being something like this, it means that basically I have two trajectories which are arriving at the same point. And this is a shock in Burgers. It's a shock in the sense that the velocity, which is defined as the gradient of this thing, will take two different values depending. So the velocity is nothing but, so u at x t is nothing but the d gamma dt, or d gamma ds at s equals, how do you define s? Yes, at s equals t for the minimizer. Okay, so if I have two different minimizer, I will have two different velocities. But then in more than one dimension, I can also have points where the minimum is attained in 3, in 4, etc., depending, I mean, with a given codimension. And this will correspond to a kind of hierarchy of structure of singularities that I will obtain in the solution. Okay? So now, how do one construct the stationary measure? I mean, what's happening at infinite time? So to construct the stationary measure, one is taking the limits when this initial time, so one fix the final time, and take the limit when this initial time is going to minus infinity. So we start from very far away in the past, and which correspond basically to taking, instead of that, we take minus infinity, and we forget about the initial. Okay, so and this is defining a solution, a statistically stationary solution of the forced, of the Burgers equation with the random forcing. And this is well defined. I mean, this, there are strong mathematical results by Sinai on this kind of thing. Okay, that's fine.
Isn't it, if you forget about initial condition, that means you take all initial conditions, because all can come from infinity, right?
The thing is that.
Well, I don't understand.
Actually, this integral is becoming infinite, so it's becoming much larger than the potential itself. Yeah. So you are forgetting the information of the initial potential.
Okay.
Question. You mean stationary distribution for one point in space or complete distribution?
No, complete distribution for the full.
Including case when scales, you can consider correlation of psi on scales much larger than scale of correlation of force. Yeah.
This is a subtle point. I will come to it.
Because.
So now are the results. I mean, this was the trivial thing. Huh? No, the first result is the fact that this is a well defined object. So now the first non-trivial result is the fact that when you look at these different minimizers, so let me draw a sketch. Yeah. Again, time, position. Okay, so you fix time. So let me write just okay, like this. So this is position. Okay, and now for each point here, you have a given minimizer. Okay, which corresponds to the curve which is minimizing this action. And now a first non-trivial result is that all these minimizers are converging together backward in time. Okay, all the minimizers are stemming from the same point. Okay.
What is x? X is a spatial coordinate.
X is space and t is time. Okay.
So it's going to infinity.
It's going to minus infinity.
They proved it in 1D, but it's actually in any
dimension. In any dimension, yes.
Yeah.
So wait a minute. So this is true when the velocity
f equals a constant, for example.
What?
F equals a constant.
F equals a constant.
And the gradient of F.
So gamma is linear.
So there must be some conditions on F. So that this is
it's working for F equals a constant. You mean for zero forcing? No, it does work.
Okay.
No, but no, then no. The thing is that.
Sorry, then I don't know.
X.
Then
the only minimizer
are linear.
X has to be defined on a finite set, on a finite manifold. That's the thing. It cannot be an infinite set. Okay, it has to be a compact manifold.
But Bernard is saying that if your force is zero, then your gamma is a linear function.
Yes.
But they all linear functions are just. And the linear with any slope, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, but because your initial condition was zero at this point, basically.
They are all coming from the same point, okay? And they touch at infinity. They don't approach each other. Basically, if you take a finite time, okay, you will get something like this. Okay, they are all coming from neighborhood, like this. And when you take the initial time to minus infinity, this is shrinking and this is going to infinity, so that all lines look parallel, but I mean at the end they touch at infinity. And so basically this is an important statement, so which basically is more or less the fact that you have to live on a finite manifold, on a compact.
Any finite region originates from the point.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay. And so now another important point is important fact is that actually they are all approaching a specific minimizer. Okay. Which can be pushed forward in time, and so which will correspond to a minimizer at any later time, and which basically will always exist. Okay, and it corresponds to the global minimum of the action when you replace this time t by plus infinity. Okay, so it's called the global minimizer. And it's unique.
Hamid will be here in March before I forget.
Yes, yes.
I just want to say.
And it's unique.
So gamma is a function of x and t, or gamma is just a function of x?
Gamma is just a function of time.
Just a function of time.
Yes, it's time.
But
okay.
But if you want to compute the solution at position x and time t,
right,
you have to look at all the gammas,
yeah,
such that their final position is x.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
So, but a line you draw there, line will represent what? Just the.
So for each. So if I fix time here, okay, yeah. I fix time, and I look at all position in space.
Yeah, yeah.
So sorry, this is x. Then for each position,
yeah.
I have minimizers. So usually one, but from time to time I can have two, of course. Like this.
Okay.
So the all in this key trajectory.
Minimizer is a trajectory like this gamma, which is minimizing the action.
Pass from minimizing. A pass. I'm just trying to understand it on the chart x and t. Each pass is a
gamma.
Is a gamma, right?
Is, each pass is a gamma. Is a minimal gamma.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
T equal to s. It's just a Lagrangian trajectory or something.
Yes.
So is this for one realization of the noise? Are you going to average over this, or?
So this is for a given realization of the noise.
And you are going to average later.
Depending on what you want to measure, of course. Okay. But for instance, so let me continue. You will see.
Well, what does it mean that it approaches in plus infinity? These gamma seem to.
Yes. I will come also to it. So basically, so let me finish with this global minimizer. So this global.
Maybe it's nonsense, but I mean, what I'm confused about now is that these are just statements about particles moving in some landscape.
Yes.
It's got nothing to do with. So okay. So for example, if I took a random landscape, then I would have, you know, focal points and all kinds of singularities.
But
so what you're talking about.
You have to have a hydrodynamical description of this moving particles.
No. But I'm just trying to understand. For example, so about what's known and what's not known. So I envisage the trajectories and they move over the random landscape and.
So for instance, what you're doing is that.
So defocus.
But you're minimizing.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you could think about
I mean, there are analogies with directed polymers, for instance, where you have a random landscape,
yes,
and you put a polymer which is stretched in one direction and which can fluctuate in the other direction. Okay, and if you are doing the average with respect to the fluctuations of the polymer,
yes,
okay, what you will get is that the Gibbs measure is distinct, more or less. Okay, but then you are taking the limit of zero temperature, and
okay,
the limit of zero temperature corresponds to zero viscosity.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. and so now the global minimizer, an important result is that this global, so I will call it gamma global minimizer, okay, which depends on time, is a hyperbolic trajectory of this dynamical system. And this, Grisha, was shown only in 1D. But I mean, there are strong evidence that it's the same in higher dimensions.
All I know about all this is all 1D, so I kind of find. I learned it 1D long ago, and then I never knew about the generalization.
So the global minimizer is the one which arrives at some specific point, right?
No, the global minimizer is among all the minimizer you can define, is the only one,
yeah,
which will remain a minimizer at any later time.
Okay.
And so basically, then all the trajectories are converging to this specific trajectory because they are converging together, and this specific trajectory is a hyperbolic trajectory, in the sense that it has a stable and unstable manifolds. So, and this was shown mathematically only in 1D, but there are very strong evidence, numerical at least, that it's also true in more than one dimension.
1D is for this equation in 1D, right?
For this equation in 1D.
But the hyperbolic is what's the dimension of the phase space here?
It's 2, because the position velocity.
Okay.
And so now what's happening let me go to a specific case, the case where I'm living on the torus.
That's actually where it all was proved.
What?
It actually was proved on the torus.
No, it was proved for any compact manifold. Oh.
Anything
which is compact. So now let me unfold this periodic domain. Okay, so basically, I have the periodic domain and I'm considering the replica of it. And as you can see, then I will have different replica of the global minimizer. Okay, so like this, which is a shift of one of it. And now I will have that some trajectories will approach this replica and others will approach this one. And there is a point somewhere where I have a separation between things which are approaching a given replica and things which are a minimizer which are approaching a given replica and a minimizer which are approaching another one. And at this point, there are two minimizers. And this is a shock. And this is it's a specific shock. It's called the main shock.
So you have to go to the torus in order to get the shock, or is that the kind
of, no? No, the kind of main shock you will obtain depends on the kind of boundary conditions you have. So in the case of periodic boundary conditions, it's very easy to understand what is the main shock, something like this. In the case of no slip boundary condition, it would be different. It would be on the boundaries.
Okay.
And so basically, of course, I mean, you have the same image of this main shock on the period. And so this main shock is correspond literally to the positions where, so maybe I can, how can I draw it? No, it's basically, if you have in one dimension, so the torus is something like this, okay? You have places where trajectories are approaching the global minimizer, which is, let's say, somewhere there, from a given direction, others which are approaching from another direction, and the transition point is the main shock. Okay? And so now, this main shock, again, is unique. Okay, so there is a unique main shock, defined uniquely. And all secondary shocks, which are shocks which are existing at a given time, so other positions where you have two minimizers, are still existing when you go forward in time, and they will eventually, at some point, merge with this main shock. So the main shock is attracting all the secondary shocks. Okay, and this main shock has existed at all during the whole prehistory of your solution. It has always existed, and all the other shocks have only a finite age. Okay.
Now you said there was about two dimensions evidence. So how does is it then? Is it a torus?
And I mean,
how do they? So are they then lines, singularities, or?
I will tell you.
Yeah.
Two dimensions. So two dimensions, basically. So this is x time, and so let's take t2, okay?
Yes.
And now you have different replica of the global minimizer. Okay. And now you can define sets of points, okay, which are approaching a given minimizer like this. Okay? Is it clear or
yes.
Getting less and less clear?
well,
okay.
So don't quadruple everything because you really want a one line.
And now this thing here is defining a tailing. Okay, of the unfolding of the two-dimensional torus. So you have a tailing, a periodic tailing of R2. Okay.
Yes.
And now the thing that we know.
So there are lines now, the boundaries between.
There are lines, but not only lines, because basically you have to get points.
Sure. I understand. Yeah.
Okay. So you have.
So these are
by dimension counting. The most probable is to have triple points.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So basically you have a tailing with lines and triple points, then you use Euler formula and you show that it's hexagonal tailing.
Oh, okay.
You just it's straightforward. So now what it means that you have a tailing which is done like this, huh? So hexagonal. and when you look at a given window of your periodic domain, you have something like this. So that typically you have four regions where you're approaching different replicas of your global minimizer. And so the global shock is this structure. So from time to time, it can go through a change in shape, etc. I mean, you can complicate it a bit, but this is the stable part at which you're spending a lot of time. And so if you represent it on the torus, what you have is that you have two triple points, okay? And then you have one line which is connecting them like this, which is one of this one, for instance, one going through the other way, and the other one going down, see, like this, through. So you have three ways to connect without intersecting the triple point. Okay, so now let me go back to 1D. And now let us use the fact that this global minimizer is a hyperbolic trajectory. So basically, let us represent what's happening in the position velocity. So this is like gamma, and this is like gamma dot, phase space. Okay. So if I take a snapshot like this, I will have somewhere the global minimizer, okay, the position velocity of the global minimizer at time t. And as it's a hyperbolic trajectory, I can define something which will be the unstable manifold of this trajectory. So it's a dynamical unstable manifold which is evolving with the dynamics, but if I take a given snapshot, it's like this. Okay? And now, as we know that all minimizers, okay, which will correspond to a given point during this snapshot, because it's a given I mean, it's an instant representation of such trajectories. All these minimizer approaching the global minimizer backward in time, what we have is that they are lying somewhere on this unstable manifold. Hmm? And now, the thing is that usually this unstable manifold will have loops like this, where one cannot define typically one velocity. So these loops have to be cut. Okay? And so now one is getting rid of these loops, and the solution to Burger's equation, the graph of the solution to Burger's equation, is exactly this manifold like this. Because it's
velocity.
Because it's velocity. And this is giving very strong result on the smoothness of the solution, even in the case of stochastic forcing, because basically if one can define the nth derivative of f, then there are results saying that if f is cn, basically the unstable manifold will be cn minus 1. And so basically it's giving smoothness results on the solution outside shocks, which is something which is non-trivial to obtain in the limit of infinite time, I mean, for the stationary solution.
Suppose I start with the initial condition of running noise, and so how to connect that, what you're saying here, to the dynamical system that you were... Dynamical system here is...
If you want, I can write it this way. Gamma dot is V, and V dot is grad F of gamma.
Right.
The equation for the characteristics.
That is the same expression, right?
So what was your question?
The order Lagrangian equation, so it is just the particle dynamics.
Yeah, it's the particle dynamics, except that in order to catch the shocks, mm-hmm. you have to look at the infimum. Otherwise, you will have caustics appearing.
Yes.
Okay.
So basically, it's the usual picture for burgers. So if you start from a sine initial condition, after a given time, if you just forget the force, okay, and solve this equation, what you will get is, so this is gamma V, what you will get is something like this.
Yeah.
Okay, and you have to be aware on how to cut the thing to create, to have the shocks. And the way to cut it is, of course, by continuity of the potential, which basically means that you can apply a Maxwell rule where you say that the area of these two loops is equal, etc., and because of the continuity of the potential, and then you get the position of the shock. This thing is changing this picture to the case where you have a stochastic forcing applied to it. And it's valid to the limit of
infinity. If you think about this particle system, mm-hmm. I was just asking, Paul, but maybe I should. So then it's like this, that you, because of the minimization, and because if you go through a caustic, the minimum principle changes to a maximum principle, mm-hmm. what you do is you go from caustic to caustic and piece together your trajectory so that it becomes a minimum.
You have sticky trajectories if you want.
Sure.
But with the collision rule, which is not so trivial, you don't you don't conserve momentum.
I don't know how you piece them together, but anyway. Yes. Okay, and the other question is, can you connect this picture where you drew the main shock to the shocks there? Yes. I can't quite 100%.
I have not yet talked about the main shock. So the main shock is obtained by, so basically, again, if I consider the unfolded picture of the torus, I will have another replica of this unstable hyperbolic point with its own unstable manifold, which will correspond to a different branch. So let me try to do it by periodicity. So this, so it has to be up. So this corresponds to that. Okay, it's with a shift of one.
They can't intersect.
Okay, and they cannot intersect, of course. And so, as they cannot intersect, basically, as you have to connect them somehow, there is a shock which is going from one branch to the other. Let's say, for instance, here. Okay? And this shock is the main shock. And how to define its position? Its position is defined by something which is conserved by the dynamics, which is this, which is the total momentum, the integral of the torus of U. This is conserved. What?
There you lost me now.
So basically, this thing is conserved by the dynamics, even in the limit of vanishing viscosity. And this is nothing but the area of defined by this curve. Okay, so basically all this area.
Oh, that it is, yes.
Okay, and if you, for instance, if you start from zero mean velocity, special mean of the velocity.
That determines where you.
And in order to determine where this thing is placed, basically you have to have the full area equal to zero. So there is again a kind of Maxwell rule, which is again connected to the conservation, to the continuity of the potential. And now if you have something which is different from zero, basically. Psi is not anymore periodic, so you have a discontinuity of psi, and you have to manage it with care, and but it's feasible.
Jeremy?
Okay, so maybe, yes?
If you let this situation decay, take zero random forcing,
mm-hmm.
then it's not the main shock who's going to survive, right? Which is the last shock? It's not the main shock, but...
What do you mean decay? Decay is a finite viscosity.
Well, if you switch off forcing.
Yeah, switch off forcing and take zero viscosity, then only one shock will survive.
So basically, the picture you have when you look at shock trajectories is somehow something which is dual to this. So you have shocks which are forming from time to time, and eventually they will merge together, etc. And they will somehow go all one with the other, like this, this way. So this is the shock trajectories. So if you stop at some point the forcing, you will finish creating shocks, and all shocks will merge together to create a unique shock. Okay? And the definition of the main shock is the only branch, I mean it's going down the branch, which has always existed in the past. Okay?
And then it's automatically the main shock.
And it's automatically the main shock, yes.
Always.
But you see, when you have two shocks which are merging, so for instance, which would correspond to, for instance, this thing moving this way and going like this, I mean, you don't trace anymore which one is the main shock, which one is not the main shock.
It is true that this description is really focused on shocks.
Minimizer shocks. Is a mirror image of a shock.
Yes.
Backward in time is minimizer, forward in time is shock.
Well, I mean is that if there are lots of other structure not so attached to the singularities, because the original equation has two actions. One is random force.
Mm-hmm.
Another is the diffusion. If I'm staying in that random coordinate,
mm-hmm.
that two things. Now this is passing on the zero viscosity limit. Okay, this is what the minimizer is. Zero viscosity limit, which is the random agitation becomes, you know, temperature is cooled down and cooled down, and how the random force acting, just mm-hmm. taking the random force action. Now there is a strong dynamics here happening is the shock.
Yes.
I form the shock, and it tells us how, sort of in high dimension, how the shock forms in different types of singularities. This is what I learned from here.
Yes.
But what I want to see, if I generally consider, you know, transient state. What transient state is that for viscosity very, very small, that transient state could be very long. I have a very jiggling, a lot of structures there in space, big shock, small shock. And how that formalism can actually yields more interesting information about that. Multi-scale properties. I have big shocks, small shocks, a lot of shocks.
So basically, so if you want to understand the for instance the probability to have a shock which is a bit strange, which has a something like something which will give a statistical signature which is
for example the
singularity of higher codimension than just a jump, for instance.
For example, for the probability of the sort of the amplitude of the shock,
mm-hmm.
how that's related to that formula, how can that derive the, you know, probability for the amplitude of the shock change?
Through things that you will know on this, on the stable manifold.
On stable manifold.
In the stationary case. If you're looking at transient, basically it will depend. So then you have to put back T0, you will have to put the initial thing, and this will depend on what you put as an initial condition.
I don't know if you know, if you're aware of that. I mean, I did that
in
the paper with Sinai and others. We will study this, how the, how the initial distribution actually matters.
Yes, but
the distribution of the shock and
of course, but it was a different setting in the sense that you were not having forcing,
yeah.
and that you were having a fractional Brownian motion for the potential.
Right.
So it's a bit different.
Yeah.
I mean, this relates to putting randomness in the initial condition.
Yeah.
And just making a deterministic evolution. So I'm considering a reverse case.
Right.
Which is basically I forget about what I put as an initial condition, and I'm looking at a stationary state.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a bit different. And in my case, what I told there, everything concerns a smooth in space forcing.
Okay.
And in the case when the forcing is becoming rough or has power law correlations,
mm-hmm.
then most of the things I said are not working.
I see.
Mm. Another question.
Mm-hmm.
So the Maxwell construction for the other shocks,
mm-hmm.
it means that the two actions should be the same.
Yeah.
And why is that?
Because a shock is corresponding to a place where you have two minimizers.
Yes.
So if that you have two
minimizers.
So maybe I will. So except if you have questions, I mean, it was just to give an overview of.
It's just if you wanted to go more or less divided equally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
putting in its list questions, numerous questions.
What is the topic now?
What kind of...
Well, okay,
everything is about Burgers. Everyone tells his about favorite fact about Burgers.
Yes.
Not everyone, but some of us.
Well, I will tell you, I mean, Burgers is important because comes about in a very, it's very ubiquitous and comes about in very different fields. So now I will tell you a story which, the beginning of which is located very far away from all of what we've been discussing up to now. But then as long as the story will unfold, then we will get closer and closer and we will end up with a Burgers equation, more or less. Well, more or less surprising, perhaps, or maybe not, depend on your personal intuition. So the topic, but the motivation of the thing I'm going to tell you about probably pertains more to the other program, which is at the moment here, perhaps, than to this one. And not completely, but perhaps. So this is, there is the following problem, and is the problem of thermodynamics of small systems. By thermodynamics of small systems, I mean, to be physically concrete, a statistical description of, for example, molecular motors which are active within our cells. For example, the kinesin, which is responsible for very important functions which are related to the transcription and repair of DNA and RNA. But again, if you want to know more about these things, probably you should ask to other persons than me. So these systems are characterized by the fact that since the number of degrees of freedom is not very big, you cannot have the thermodynamics limit, and fluctuations remain very important. The other fact is that motion occurs in very viscous environments, but nevertheless occurs, this comes from experimental facts, at very high efficiency. So it seems like that these molecular motors are acting in, are doing things in a very right way. They're optimizing. So the main question is then to see whether we are able to understand what they are optimizing and to give a description of what is called the protocol, which means the procedure that they follow to govern their motion. If you want an overview, phenomenological overview of this topic, I would perhaps refer you to a paper, short but very insightful, by Bustamante. And others, which was in Physics Today of a few years ago, 2005. And there you will find the background for what I just said. So how can we define, construct thermodynamics for a small system? Well, the simplest idea would be to try to model the system in terms of a stochastic differential equation, in which we have some deterministic part, the drift, which contains the information about what the system wants to do, and then the stochastic part, which accounts for the fluctuations of the environment, of a viscous environment in which the system is moving. So although I could take a much more general description of this, let me assume that the dynamics is described by this very simple, let me use V. Stochastic differential equation. And this is gradient of a certain potential. And and this is the stochastic Wiener increment. And beta, as usual, is 1 over
k of a constant and Boltzmann constant and the temperature. And so let us suppose now that our system is described by this gradient type dynamics, because the drift is supposed to be the gradient of a certain given potential, which we don't assume to be autonomous. So it could be also explicitly time dependent. So if a system is explicitly time dependent, we could perhaps try to use quantities which are defined by the stochastic differential equations to construct the first law of thermodynamics. This is an idea which was introduced some 10 years ago and which has stirred lots of attention. So it's due to Dzerzhinsky.
Well, actually, you know,
yeah.
The talk here, I remember, when I was here for the first time, on precisely that.
Was precisely this?
95, maybe, or 96.
Oh, I see. Well, yeah.
And I couldn't quite make out what it was about then.
Now you have a second chance.
Well, let's see whether I can make the picture even more confused, but let's see. So the idea is to say that we can interpret the following quantity. As the thermodynamics work done by the system. Let's for the moment stay with this definition. And this would be a function of course, of a gradient V. This is by far not the most general definition of Dzerzhinsky work, but for this system, it's okay. And correspondingly, since we want to have the first law, we can define on the same time horizon, going from some t naught to t, the heat. Here we have to be careful, though. Yes, let me. We have to be careful because since this is the differential of psi, and this is a stochastic differential equation, this object here is not a standard, is not a Riemann integral. It's it has to be defined, and it depends on the way you construct the Riemann sum on the partition. So, in order to have the usual first law, pathwise, you need to require that this scalar product is also obtained from a Stratonovich-like discretization of a stochastic integral. That's why I try to write here Stratonovich, to remind you that this is a very special stochastic integral. So the reason for doing that is that, in general, stochastic integral do not obey ordinary calculus. And you have only to pick one special prescription, which is due to Stratonovich, and then you will preserve the rules of ordinary calculus. This has the advantage, of course, to be very intuitive if you are used to Leibniz rule. But from the probabilistic point of view, it's not very natural, because essentially what happens is that the stochasticity, which is encoded in the stochastic differential and which comes from the Wiener increment of the Wiener process, is not let's say, it's at any given time, it's such that the increment won't be independent from the state of the system, which is stored into the gradient. This means that if I focus on this term here, I'm discretizing something like t plus dt minus dt, wt, sorry. And here, I'm sampling the trajectory as dt plus psi t So I'm picking something of what happened to the realization of a Wiener process at time t plus dt, which means that this object here, this object here, won't be independent from this one. So if I'm going to take, for example, the average of this term here, this won't factor, because independence is missing. However, there are well-known rules of stochastic calculus, which allows you to map this object here into an object such that the stochastic part can be factored out, which means this term is independent of this term here. And this is the classical Ito to Stratonovich convention, which allows me to rewrite the heat in the following form. And now I use the definition of a stochastic differential equation, and I rewrite it in the following way. And then, and this is acting on V, and then I will define what this operator is here. And then the second term will be
are you deriving Yerzhinsky relation, or your
What is my plan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just need to get to the Ito expression, because everything is more manageable. Then I will explain exactly what I'm aiming at. Yes. Okay. Okay. So I need to write this. No, I don't want to pass through Dzerzhinsky completely. I will. And this operator here, it's just the generator of a stochastic process, which in general I can write in this form here. So it's acting on potential D. So the advantage of having this expression is now that if I take the average, this term will be zero, because the increment is zero on average, and I will have to deal only with the average of this term here. Okay, so this is just rewriting. So this is, at this stage, what I just wrote for you is a possible definition of the first law of thermodynamics, and now I want to use it to describe the thermodynamics of a small system which evolves according to the stochastic differential equation. Now, all of this may sound a little bit arbitrary, because I just say that this is the work and this is the heat, and there is no special reason a priori why these are good quantities, good thermodynamics quantities. However, it turns out, and I think I will spare you this calculation, maybe I can go back to that later, that from the probabilistic point of view, the heat is an intrinsic quantity. It is a very specific meaning, which is the following. If you construct this a density, depending upon the path of the realization, upon the realization of my stochastic process, and this is e to the lambda beta, and then q of v, defined in this way or into the equivalent Ito way. Well, and then, for example, you consider the following functional of a position and time, which you obtain by averaging the delta function at time t, which fixes the position at time t of my system evolving from some t naught to a certain point in space x. And then you weight this term by the heat functional, it is a simple exercise in stochastic calculus to see that if you take the time derivative of this object here with respect to time, the right-hand side for lambda equals zero won't be anything else than the Fokker-Planck operator. This is dagger adjoint, acting on g lambda zero. So this object here will describe, govern the forward in time evolution of the dynamical system. However, if I change the value of lambda and I choose now lambda equal 1, and so this in general is also a function of lambda. Well, sorry, no, now I set lambda to 0 and to 1. Then what I will obtain instead is the generator itself of the stochastic process, meaning that this density here, which is specified by the heat, waits, establish a connection under time reversal between a process which is going forward in time, described, governed by this Fokker-Planck evolution, and another process instead which is going backward in time, because you see this is the generator which usually revert the sign. Well, this object here does not preserve probability, to be more precise. So this won't describe the evolution forward in time of a density, but rather will describe the evolution forward in time of an average. And this means that these two equations do not pertain to the same stochastic picture of in the sense of Kolmogorov-Thayer. I don't know if I'm clear or not, but usually...
You're saying one is just the adjoint of the other.
No, it's exactly what I'm not saying.
Then it's not clear.
Well, I mean...
But is it the same difference as the basic scalar and density for advection?
Yes, in the sense that if you have a passive scalar transported forward in time, okay, the corresponding density evolution of that underlying Lagrangian dynamics is going backward in time. And the other way around, if you have a concentration evolving forward in time, the Lagrangian picture underlying that dynamics will be backward in time. So these two equations won't pertain to the same underlying Lagrangian dynamics, but nevertheless they are connected by this functional. So in a way, this functional is giving you the cost that you are paying to do a time reversal operation on a certain stochastic dynamics. So in this sense, you can give already an intrinsic interpretation of this quant functional here. Doesn't guarantee you that this is a heat, but at least it's a good hint that you are on the that there is an intrinsic meaning in what you're doing. So what is the idea at this stage? The idea is that if we accept that we have written the first law for our system pathwise, we may ask ourselves the following question. What is the, if we consider the average heat or work, the heat released by the system or work done on the system during a certain transformation connecting one initial state of a system described by a probability density perhaps. I mean, it's not the only way to characterize the initial state of the system, but it's a natural one. Suppose this is given, a time t equal t naught.
U naught is not v at time zero?
Not necessarily. It would be natural and desirable that it is, but I mean, the system may not be at equilibrium when, well, I will come to this point. I have assigned an initial state, And then I want to assign a final state between which I want to move, or into which I would like to transform the system. And that could be assigned either by specifying an initial, a final density. And once again, I write UF. Or could be specified by assigning the final value that the potential specifying the trace field has to assume. So given these conditions, and I ask myself, which are the optimal values, which means minimal value of the heat released during the transformation, or minimal value of the work which one has to do on the system to achieve the transformation, and in particular, which is the optimal value of the V which achieves optimality.
Okay, so, I mean, for example, so it would be nice if you could connect it briefly to a usual equilibrium thermodynamics. So, you know, one could ask, for example, what if I did this process infinitely slowly? Because then I should go through a sequence of equilibrium positions.
Yeah.
And the functional.
Well, then. Yeah.
But how do I do this here? I have not the faintest idea.
You will see.
It's a different problem.
I mean, it
how to come from this probability to that probability? What force to use to force system from that state to that state?
I understand. I mean, but in principle, one could try to do that adiabatically, and actually that limit will be encoded in here. But of course, it will turn out to be a very special situation. So now the issue here is to see whether we have a general formalism to attain, to describe this optimization problem, and which kind of equation of optimal transport it brings about.
Yes.
Okay. So let me focus, for example, on the heat. So this quantity here. And consider the average value of the heat as a function of V.
We have 15 minutes.
So, as I said, by converting it from Stratonovich to Ito, this term here won't matter for me, and this is the important one. So what do I mean by average? I mean now, since I have underlying this stochastic dynamics, I mean that I want to average this quantity here with respect to the transition probability density, which is specified by this dynamics, which is, on its turn, the fundamental solution of the Fokker-Planck equation. At least in principle. But I want to evolve not a generic situation, I want to evolve a specific initial condition. So this P won't be then the fundamental solution, but at time t equal t naught must be equal to my P naught, m naught, if I have assigned it. So, and then I want to perform, of course, the integral over time at each final time s. So how can I define the optimal solution? Well, one way of constructing it is to reason in the following way, which comes from optimal control theory, and is the following. If in general, this object here won't be, because of the fact that D is non-autonomous, a total differential. If it was, then I would be able to perform exactly my integral here, and then I would have only as an answer a boundary term which I could treat more simply. So the idea is to ask myself whether it's possible to find a special function A such that
that V will be Bürger's equation, will satisfy Bürger's equation, that V.
At the moment, no, not necessarily. At the moment, it's not zero.
Optimality, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, not all of V, a part of it. Okay, so I will ask myself whether it's possible to find a certain function A such that this quantity here is at least under average equal to zero. What's the advantage? That this is, since t is time dependent, the average of a total differential along stochastic trajectories governed by my original dynamics. This is just by definition of, well, this just follows as a simple application of stochastic calculus. What you do is differentiate along the path, then you will have the linear term in the derivative. But since then you have also a term which comes from the Wiener process, this term will require you to make a Taylor expansion up to second order, which give rise to this term here. And then, since you're applying Itô lemma, you will, the term which is linear in the Wiener increment is just zero under average.
Well, maybe at that point of time, no reason to give the derivation, because most
I
can follow it anyways.
No. Oh, okay.
To give an answer and explain them, then to derive them in any continuous ways is just plain impossible.
Okay, yeah, but at least the logic, I don't want to. Okay, so the thing is that if I can find this A here, this will be an exact differential, and then I will be in much better shape in order to treat this integral here. So what I want to do now, in the spirit of stochastic control, is to find the optimal value of V for which this which is consistent with this evolution, so a stationarity condition, meaning that I will take just the functional derivative with respect to V, in which sense, because here I'm averaging as well. So each time there is a derivative acting on my protocol, the function with respect to which I'm trying to find stationarity in my equation, I will integrate by part and carry the derivative over the measure term, the probability. So this is the exercise that you can do. And so now I will spare you the detail of the calculation, because it's totally straightforward. I will only introduce a definition which will be useful to understand what goes on. So let me write A and D in the following way, where R is what we could call the local equilibrium potential. It is the logarithm of a measure M, which comes P, to be consistent with the definition I gave there, which is evolved according to the Fokker-Planck equation. So if were I at equilibrium, then this would be the equilibrium potential according to Boltzmann distribution. Okay, so with this definition here, if I perform the functional variation and look for the equation that come about, then I will have a following surprise. Look, this is important to stress. The control potential is the sum of two terms. One is precisely the local equilibrium, because it comes from the logarithm of p. And then there is psi, which is instead represent the fluctuation with respect to the equilibrium potential. So this object here will be essentially fixed by the Fokker-Planck equation. But this object here will be the outcome of the evolution of this object here, will be the prediction of a variation with respect to this equation that I just wrote here. So it will come from the evolution of A. So I performed this, and what I get into is this pair of equation.
While you write it, can you remind what is being maximized? Just with words.
Oh,
save time.
The heat.
You can write at the same time and explain.
Oh, yes. Well, it turns out that these equations are universal in the sense that they work for both heat and work. Only the boundary conditions which are associated to them will change.
Okay.
So this will be one tau. And then I will have n big psi. I remind you that the connect, oh, I better call it p. Or maybe, I like the m, and it will define the same type of, let me call this m. So, what I got is that the optimal transport problem, which characterizes the transformation at minimal heat or at minimal work, is governed by essentially the implicit limit of a Burger's equation that you recognize here, and the optimal and the mass transport associated to it, which is quite surprising. Now, depending upon whether I am interested in heat or work, boundary
so adiabatic would be psi equals to zero.
Yes, precisely at all times.
And that doesn't minimize the world.
No, there's no dynamics.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. Only if there is no dynamics, then it will have adiabatically. Yeah. But the problem here at physical level, I mean, at mathematical level, the situation is it's clear in the sense that now I can, for example, as I say, I assign a knot, I can assign MF. I have two boundary conditions, so I can evolve this system, solve this system. And I will have an answer. However, this answer is not guaranteed to enforce the fact that at least when I prepare the state at the initial time, the system will be in equilibrium with the dynamics which is described. Meaning that, what I was saying before, that u naught may not be the value of v at time t naught, so the system would be in equilibrium. What does it mean? Well, it means the following, that the optimization procedure that we constructed is such that minimizes the work or the heat released by the system, but doesn't take into account the apparatus which is acting externally on the system. There is nothing which prevents, for example, a jump or what is called a bang-bang solution for the optimal control. I can switch in a zero time my potential from being at equilibrium to a value finitely different from the value that
within the optimization horizon I need to have to achieve optimality. Meaning that the value of this, if you want me to rephrase it in another way, the optimal problem is stated in an open time interval and not in a closed one. In this sense, this is mathematically completely consistent description of optimization procedure. However, it's not physically completely satisfactory because, I'm not going to tell an experimentalist that it has to jump its potential in zero time from one state to another. I mean, what it means, of course, is that this is probably the small, this solution is first of all an inf, not a minimum, and is achieved on a problem which has multiple scales, and therefore there should be, this describes most likely as a slow manifold of a physical system which, however, I haven't completely described in the sense that I haven't introduced in my definition of the heat or of the work anything which would give a sensible finite cost of preventing the apparatus to change, to switch on and switch off instantaneously.
Yes, and why, what's the intuition? Why do these, I mean, it's from the, so from what Jeremy explained and the shocks and so on, I can see that the optimal V it will jump. But why is it so that this comes out?
From my point of view, this is really the open physical question which is present in the optimal thermodynamics, which is how do you give a consistent description of heat such that you have a traceable connection with filtration theorem, which means this relation under time reversal coupling a forward and a backward dynamics, and at the same time you give weight cost of preventing as should appear in the physical world jumps from occurring. I mean, in here there is no such a feature. I mean, you can overcome easily. I mean, you could introduce, for example, a Lagrange multiplier here.
Yes.
And prevent and somewhat describe your functional state.
But why is it that jumps are so good? Why is it that jumps are so good?
No, jumps are not good.
No, I mean, here, the optimal solution, they
oh, because are automatic. Well, and because they're present. Because you see, here you have two equations, two transport equations. Well, on some boundary conditions,
yeah.
But you have a third requirement, which is the smoothness, if you want, so the requirement of a protocol.
Otherwise, you will get singularities in M anyway.
Yes.
So if you have singularities in M, then you can impose strokes somehow.
Right, but.
Wait, can you say that again? So basically, there are no shocks.
You're starting from as far as I'm.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, your boundary conditions are initial and final condition.
Precisely.
Okay.
Perhaps I could be also something else, but this is only one. Yes.
Okay. And then basically the initial field M and the final field M are smooth.
Right.
And what is stated here is just that the map from one to the other is a potential map.
Yes.
And the optical map is just straight lines.
Yes.
That's all.
Yes.
That's all.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
But basically,
the problem there would be an acceleration.
But do you go through a Monge-Ampère equation to write it or?
You mean, to construct explicitly, to arrive here.
To arrive there.
No, to arrive here I used the control theory, really. And actually, I will stop here, because I will run out of time, but otherwise. But the cute thing is that the control theory, which is needed to tackle this problem, is not the classical one, which is due to Bellman. Because these functionals, since they involve the generator L, involve derivatives of the control or protocol V. So you need an extension. This extension was actually attained in the context of what was called the stochastic mechanics, which was a way to try to reinterpret quantum mechanics in terms of stochastic processes having some defined behavior under time reversal. And the general presentation of the theory, which I found most useful, is in a paper by Francesco Berra and Laura Morato of 1983, which is a very beautiful paper, actually, which I very also plain to read. So the tools come from a completely different field also as well. I will stop here, but I would be glad, of course, if you have a further question to discuss here later. Okay.